Patrick McNeil, Chaski Moan, Matt Kaczynski.
All across the country.
Michael Knoll.
The stories are all the same.
Brian Welzin.
An athletic.
Craig Burrows.
Intelligent.
Adam Falcon.
Well-liked college student goes missing. Family and friends launch a massive search. Weeks or months later, the young man is discovered drowned. In more than 40 cases, the deaths are blamed on a drunken accident. Except for one.
Chris Jenkins.
The death of Chris Jenkins in Minneapolis is the only one where the cause of death was changed from an undetermined drowning to homicide.
Hey everybody, it's us again, and it's episode 68. I think, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, 68.
Smiley face murders.
Yeah, this is kind of an interesting one. I actually didn't know much about this, and this was also a listener request. It's weird because we've done shows about serial killers before. You know, we do a lot of true crime type of shows. Mm-hmm. This is kind of the first time that I know of that we're doing one about a theoretical serial killer.
Okay, yeah.
I guess the Atlanta Ripper was kind of a theoretical serial killer because they don't know if that was all one dude or not.
Yeah, and before we get off to end this too much, this is just a disclaimer. Whenever we do these serial killer things, these are not a definitive source of information about these cases. These are introductions to this case to our regular listeners. We get guys on there, this part was wrong or this tiny detail was wrong. You know, these are huge cases. They're very detailed. Jenny has to do a lot of research. The chances of there being an error, you know,
are pretty high.
Pretty high. But we mostly just do these to point them out to our regular listeners, and they can go check things out for themselves if they're interested.
Well, and like I said, I'm kind of glad that someone suggested this because I didn't really know a lot about it. And the more I looked into it, it's kind of fascinating. And really, I'm not sure where I stand on it, which is also kind of an interesting thing because there's sort of, there's evidence for and against. So, and evidently, I didn't really know, but evidently, like online, there's either people that are like super into, yes, this is like a serial killer, or people that are just as adamantly, no, it's not a serial killer. And, never the twain shall meet, I guess.
Yeah, and I've never even heard this
before. And this one, like I said, I don't really fall on either side. And I'm just going to say that on the outset because one, I don't know, like, you know, I did several days research on it and stuff like that. But, you know, it's such a huge, vast, complicated case and such a complicated theory. And there are so many cases involved that I'm not going to say that I think one or the other.
Okay.
You know what I mean? I lean toward one thing, but I'm not going to say.
I know absolutely nothing about this. This is the first time I'm hearing about it. This is Jenny's baby. But based on what you're telling me, what it sounds like is somewhere there was a bunch of homicides. They think maybe a serial killer did it. Is that what you're talking about?
Well, the thing is that a lot of them are not necessarily classified as homicides. A lot of them are, most of them are classified as accidents.
Okay, yeah.
But some people are saying that they aren't accidents, they are homicide, and that it's one or a gang of people doing it.
Okay, so this should be interesting.
Yeah.
All right.
It actually is pretty fascinating.
Want to do the plugs before we get into it?
Yeah, and then, like I said, there's only a couple. My book, The Faceless Villain, obviously, is out in print and ebook. If you bought it and liked it, please leave a review because that really helps out. The audiobook has been uploaded. I had a slight minor issue with just the sample file, but I fixed that. So hopefully, if there's no other problems, it should be on sale very soon. We did a new movie review. If you hadn't seen it, it was of The Omega Man.
The Omega Man.
With the Hest.
Yes, right. Actually, you know what?
What?
I was thinking about it. I was calling him the Hest, right?
Yeah.
I think I'm going to rename him. All right.
Into what? The Charles?
The Cheston.
The Cheston.
The Cheston actually said, you know what I'm talking about? Yeah.
You're right. I like that better.
The Cheston.
The Cheston.
Yeah, I think that's
because then he can like hang with the Crustle.
Henceforth, you shall be known as Cheston.
Which actually, in light of The Omega Man, is actually pretty apropos because he does walk around shirtless an alarming amount in that
film. Yeah, yeah, and he's got weird, scruggly old hair, and that was back in the old 70s when
In the 70s, you didn't really have to be that pumped to walk around with no shirt on.
Yeah, just look at John Wayne. I mean, look at, and then
people were a lot more forgiving back then, I guess.
John Wayne, and then
in the days of Photoshop nowadays, everyone has to look super perfect.
Then you look at the Cheston, and you're like, that's considered like an alpha male, you know, tough guy. Oh, damn.
He's a little stringy.
Stringy looking and sunken in looking chest. I ain't saying.
He's going to come kick your ass. Well, he's old, man. He
can't. I whip his ass.
He can't kick your ass. You hear that?
I thought he was dead.
Is he?
I think Cheston's dead. I'm not sure. I have to go check.
Cheston's dead.
We'll see.
I don't think he's dead. I think he's still alive.
Okay.
And also, if you would like to support the show, we have a Patreon page, as probably most of you know by now. And it's patreon.com/13oclockpodcast. If you would rather just give a one-time donation rather than a monthly donation, then you can go to our blog, which is 13oclockpodcast.wordpress.com. And there is a link in the sidebar to a PayPal account. All right, so let's get into this smiley face murders thing. Like I said, this was a reader request.
Listener request.
This was a listener request. Why do I always say that? I don't know. Because I guess because I'm used to writing books and shit.
So
this was a listener request. And like I said, I didn't know shit all about this until I started looking into it.
Was it cool?
Yeah, it's actually really interesting.
Okay, all right, let's check it out.
And like I said, there's a lot of shit about it.
All right, I'm ready.
Now, this theory...
I'm bracing myself.
You're bracing yourself?
I'm bracing myself.
Yeah, I see you do. Yeah,
me and Chastain sitting here.
Okay. So, yeah. This theory was actually... It was first put forward in 2008 by two former New York City homicide detectives.
Huh.
They had since retired, and they went into business as private investigators together.
All right. So they kind of had the institutional freedom to think for themselves and to come up with stuff.
Right.
And the time. That's
so
pretty cool.
Even though so they didn't go public with theory until 2008.
Yeah.
But the run of cases that they think are involved in this whole thing actually started around 1997.
Okay.
Although the first case that got them thinking that maybe there was a serial killer at large happened in 2002.
Okay. This is real pretty recent stuff then.
Yeah. And some people think that it's still going on.
Okay.
So,
you
piqued
my interest.
Yeah. So now, while they were still working for the NYPD, there was a guy named Christopher Jenkins, and he was a student at the University of Minnesota. It was Halloween night of 2002. He was wearing like kind of a weird like Native American kind of costume. It kind of looked like a jumpsuit that was like brown suede or something.
Okay.
And like a feathery headdress type thing. So he went to a keg party, and then he went to a place called the Lone Tree Bar and Grill in downtown Minneapolis with some of his friends. They got there about 10:30. Now, according to some of his friends and other witnesses and stuff like that, he wasn't super drunk, but evidently he like spilled a drink on the front of his costume and it made it look like he peed himself.
Okay, yeah.
So one of the bouncers was like, hey, that dude peed himself, and kind of kicked him out of the bar.
Yeah.
And he didn't have any of his stuff. Like, he didn't have his phone, his wallet, or anything. And it was, like, pretty cold out. So, you know, he didn't have his coat, his wallet, or anything like that. So, he didn't have his car keys or his apartment keys. So, he gets kicked out of the bar and vanishes off the face of the earth.
Damn.
No one sees him again.
Huh.
So, they report him missing. I think it was his roommate or roommates or whatever reported him missing. And they think, well, maybe he was drunker than we thought. Maybe he tried to walk home over the Hennepin Bridge. The parents, they hired like a private investigator, and they had all the surveillance footage like around there checked and everything like that. And they couldn't find any sign of him. So 4 months after Chris Jenkins disappeared, they found his body in the Mississippi River. And it was kind of frozen in there. You could see it from the Third Avenue Bridge. Now, at first, the cops thought, well, he must have just fallen off the bridge, or, you know, he was drunk that night, or he was trying to walk home or anything like that, or he committed suicide.
Right.
Now, his family were like, nah, that doesn't make any sense. It also seemed strange that he would, like, fall off the bridge, because if you see, there are pictures of the Hennepin Bridge, like, online. One, he never turned up on any surveillance footage, and that entire bridge is covered by surveillance cameras. And two, you can't really fall off of there.
You'd have to jump off.
Yeah, you'd have to like climb up over this big thing and all this other kind of shit. The other weird thing is that when they found his body, it was lying in the water face up. And none of his stuff was gone. Like, his shoes hadn't fallen off. Like, his shirt was still tucked in. All his jewelry was still there. All this other stuff. Nothing that indicated that he would have fallen all that way.
Right.
And he didn't have any, like, broken bones or any particular sign of trauma or anything like that. So, for a while, you know, the case was just ruled an accident. He got drunk, he fell in the river, whatever. And then they didn't find him till several months later.
What was the cause of death? Drowning?
I guess so. That was the initial finding.
Yeah.
But the family and stuff like that were kind of like, I don't think so. That seems very strange. Like I said, drowning victims are almost never found floating face up. They're usually found face down. The body didn't look like it had been in the water for 4 months. There were just other things like that that seemed kind of weird. Now, in 2006, the case was reopened and his death was actually then ruled a homicide. And this was due to some other like witness statements and stuff like that. Okay, so the Jenkins family had hired a private investigator and his name was Chuck Lesh. And he was interviewing some of the witnesses and things like that. Now, some people reported that a gang of a bunch of guys had attacked someone on the street, like by this pizza place that was right near the bar where he was. This, none of this, I don't think came up on surveillance footage or anything like that. But some witnesses said that they had seen that. He also got some canines and bloodhounds and stuff like that. And they tried to find the Chris Jenkins's scent. And they followed his scent from this kind of pizza place to this parking garage. And they actually found like a red feather in there when, and his costume had red feathers on it. So then they started to think, well, maybe he got kidnapped.
Yeah, they threw him in a van or something.
Yeah. And then, you know, they like slipped him in the water elsewhere.
Right.
But the weird thing was that there wasn't really any sign of trauma on the body or anything like that. But they did think that he had probably been murdered. Now, because of this particular case, and I should say, this was kind of, I guess, the one that kind of started the interest in it. Because then these two police investigators, Kevin Gannon and Anthony Duarte, who were the two main NYPD detectives that kind of started this whole smiley face killer theory, they started looking back at all these other cases, like drowning cases, quote unquote, that were ruled accidents. And they thought that some of them looked weird, like that maybe some of them might be homicides and that they might be all related.
So, okay, the picture's starting to come together.
Yeah.
Maybe there's a gang of guys going around drowning people or suffocating them and making it look like accidents.
And making it look like accidents. That's
like kind of
like
a thrill kill cult or something.
Yeah. Now, here's the thing. They surveyed
off
about...
Off the top of my head, it would take more than one person to do
well,
that.
Well, that's... They did kind of come up with that, yeah.
Right. And, you know, they said there was a crowd of people attacked a single man, and it was
well,
not,
some
not
witnesses
resolved.
Said
some
that.
Of them said that.
Now, okay. See, but the thing is, too, though, that they also had a statement from an inmate that was in prison who said, oh, yeah, I was there that night that Chris Jenkins got killed, and we killed him and threw him over the bridge.
Now
the private investigator was like, there's no way you could throw a big athletic dude over the bridge, not just one person. He's like, it would be hard for two people.
Yeah.
And plus, nothing ever came up on the surveillance cameras. They're like, obviously someone would have seen that.
How did he claim that they killed him?
I don't know.
Okay.
So basically, Gannon and Duarte, the two NYPD detectives that kind of got interested in this whole thing, they went back and examined a bunch of similar drowning cases. I think they did about 89, 90 cases that were, you know, similar. And they came to the conclusion that between 40 and 45 of these so-called accidental drownings, they thought were maybe murders.
Weird.
Now, this is what the similarities of it were.
Okay.
The victims were nearly always college-age white males.
Okay.
Almost always very handsome.
Okay.
Very academically successful, usually athletically successful. A lot of them, like Chris Jenkins, who I think was the captain of the lacrosse team.
Right.
Things of, you know, football players, lacrosse players, things like that.
Hmm.
All of them went missing after a night of drinking out with their friends, whereas, you know, at some point they disappeared and then they were later found floating in the water. These all happened, almost all except for Chris Jenkins, which was Halloween, but they almost all happened in the winter months, which is strange.
When school's open? Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, but none of them happened in spring,
right,
is what they're saying. Most of them happened December, January, February.
What area is this?
And well, that's the next thing I was going to say.
Okay.
Here's the thing. It's a very, very wide area. We're talking like from the Northeast to the Midwest. A lot of them in Wisconsin, Minnesota, Iowa, New York State, stuff like that.
Okay, so it's not centered around a city.
Right, it's not centered. It's like 25 different cities.
Right.
10 or 11 different states. Mm. Although they point out that most of the victims were students at colleges that are within 50 miles of the I-94 corridor.
Okay.
So I don't That's think weird. Now, oh, here's another thing, and this is kind of why they call it the smiley face killer murder theory, is that what these guys did was they used GPS tracking and stuff like that, and they looked into all these cases, and they tried to determine, using the river currents and stuff like that, where these bodies had gone into the water rather than where they were found. And they say that in at least 12 of the cases, near where the body was put into the water was graffiti of a smiley face. So they are positing that there is a serial killer or two of them or a gang of them that are basically targeting, you know, sort of middle to upper class, successful white college students, either by their theory is that the killer or killers are motivated by jealousy. Like maybe they're ugly or they're not successful or something like that. And they're kind of going after these sort of good looking dudes. But they think that maybe that they're drugging these guys or something like that. Because, you know, there have been a couple cases where...
It sounds unlikely. It just...
Well, that's what I mean.
It would have to be a gang of guys going up and down that corridor. That was I-5 corridor?
Or I-94.
I-94 corridor, going to university areas, right? And abducted drunk guys and faking their drownings. Killing them and pretending that it was a drowning.
Yeah.
And then paint a smiley face at the place where they put them in the water.
Right.
It's just very unlikely.
Well, yeah. Well, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
But, so like I said, it should be noted that most of the cases, like I think out of all the cases that they say are possible victims of this gang or whatever, almost all of them were ruled accidents at the time, that the guys were just drinking at the bar. They got drunk. They wandered off and fell into the river, because it does happen.
Yeah.
And people drown, you know, when they're drunk or whatever. However, there was another case that's usually cited that actually was at first thought to be a drowning, but then was later ruled a homicide. And this was the case of Patrick McNeil. Now, this goes all the way back to 1997. And advocates of the smiley face killer theory call Patrick McNeil victim zero, because he's kind of like maybe the first one of this happened. And this actually happened in Manhattan. The guy was 21. He was a student at Fordham University. And he was at a bar called the Dapper Dog in Manhattan on February 16th, 1997. He went there quite a lot. Witness accounts differ on how drunk he was. Some people said he was pretty drunk. Some people said he wasn't that drunk. He was evidently seen standing in front of the bar for a little while as though he was waiting for someone. Some people said he was waiting for a girl that he had met. She was in the bathroom or something like that. But then he sort of walked off by himself. Now, this case is interesting because several witnesses reported that he was kind of walking down the street and then falling and stumbling and then walking down the street and falling and stumbling. And some of his friends said, you know, he'd only had a couple of beers. So they think maybe he got drugged. Now, some other witnesses also said that there was a car that was like creeping along the curb, that every time he kind of fell down and stuff, the car would stop.
Right.
And then when he got up and started walking, that it would start again.
Yeah.
Now, they got a partial plate on it. But as far as I know, they didn't investigate that any further or anything like that. Some people saw him turning left, I think on 90th Street or something like that. And the car also turned. And after that, they didn't see the guy anymore. So he was disappeared. Everyone was looking for him and stuff like that. They didn't find his body until April 7th. And he was wearing only blue jeans and socks. And he was floating face up in the East River near the Brooklyn Pier. Now, he was badly decomposed. However, because there was not what they call skin slippage, some of the forensic examination said that he probably couldn't have been in the water all that time, that he had probably only been in the water for a day or two, as a matter of fact.
So he was rotting up on land somehow.
Also, yeah, also, and this is kind of gross, but evidently there were like housefly larvae in his pubic hair.
Yeah.
Which they said that those eggs would have had to have been laid inside in a warm climate because it was too cold outside and they wouldn't have laid in the water like that.
So somebody had him stored somewhere.
So yeah, they're not. And also, I think also the coroner said that the lividity where the blood pooled, that the blood was actually pooled in the front of his body, even though he was found in the river floating face up.
Right.
So
he was laying face down for a long time.
Right. Yeah. Also, evidently, he had some ligature marks around his neck.
Yeah, that's a,
so
that's
this,
a homicide.
Yeah, so this was almost definitely a homicide. I mean, it had to have been a homicide.
And what was the time of death? Did they know? Around the same time he disappeared?
Yeah, I'm not really sure about that. Because they couldn't really tell, like, he'd been in the cold water, and there was partial decomposition, but then some of the forensic evidence said maybe he'd been burned, like partially burned or something like that. So there's kind of a controversy there. But they're pretty sure that this guy had to have been murdered.
And he was linked in with the smiley face theory?
Yeah. So this, like I said, you know, when they went back after the Chris Jenkins thing happened in the 2000s, they kind of went back and examined other cases and they found this one.
Yeah.
You know, that initially was like, oh, he just fell in the river and drowned after a night out of partying.
Right.
Because he had been seen kind of stumbling along the street and stuff like that. But, you know, later when they examined it closer, it was obvious that he had been murdered. So like I said, at this stage, they're thinking between 40 and 45 guys that were initially thought to be drownings and now are murders. And there were a couple of other ones too. And actually, if you guys watched any of our 13 o'clock in minutes videos, and I did one that was about creepy disappearances, and there was one that happened in 2006, and the guy's name was Brian Schaefer. Now, this guy is unusual. He has been speculated that he was maybe a victim of this killer, if they exist. Although this guy's body was never found. And this disappearance was very strange. This happened in 2006. It was the same kind of thing where he was a med student. He had a degree in microbiology and he was trying to finish medical school. And he had gone out with his dad for dinner. He was like celebrating the beginning of spring break, you know, because he had just taken all his finals and he was really tired and stuff like that. So he went out with his dad for dinner and then he went out with a friend of his and they went out bar hopping. And he was last seen on surveillance cameras going into a bar called the Ugly Tuna Saluna.
Mm-hmm. Terrible.
And yeah.
That's a terrible name.
It is a terrible name. Yeah. And he was never seen coming back out, which is very weird because the whole area, it was kind of a high crime area. So most of the businesses around there, as well as the saloon itself, had surveillance cameras.
Well, then that means he's still in there.
Well, yeah, some people think that he might still be in there, but they never did find his ass. They didn't, like, report him missing until he was supposed to fly to Miami on the Monday with his girlfriend. He was going to propose to her.
There might be more to the story than we're being told. Like, maybe some of the cameras were down that day, or there's some gaps in the recordings. Maybe he could have left. You know what I mean? And not been videotaped.
Well, yeah, it's possible.
Yeah.
Maybe they just like a video don't camera know. Was off or something. They just don't know. As far as I know, they've accounted for everyone that they saw on the surveillance footage and they don't see him.
And they went in there and they turned that place upside down with a fine tooth.
Yeah. Yeah, of course they did. I mean, obviously they would do that.
Yeah.
So they just don't know where he went. And the weird thing is that they don't think that he disappeared because some people think, oh, his mom had just died and he was very upset about it. He was stressed about school and stuff like that. But it seemed weird that he would commit suicide and they never found a body. And it seemed weird that he would have run off on his own because his cell phone and his credit cards and debit card were never used again.
Yeah.
So they're imagining that he went somewhere and got killed or either died accidentally or got murdered. And they just haven't found him
yet. He must have left the place in the crowd and the crowd obscured him leaving on video. Must have been something like that. You couldn't kill a guy in there and then get him out without being seen on video.
Yeah.
And then I don't think you could disguise a guy and get him by the video camera. Besides, they were probably making sure everybody who was accountable. How many came in and how many came out.
Yeah.
That's just weird. Yeah, there must be another way out.
It's a very weird case.
There must be another way out of there. Maybe he went to the bathroom and crawled up into those tiles and then came out in another place.
Maybe. They said the only other exit at the time was like a service entrance, and they didn't see there were cameras that it was there was like a construction area behind there, and there were cameras kind of surveying that too, and they didn't see anything.
He tried to skip out on his bill or something and go up through the ceiling tiles or something. I don't know.
That seems like a pretty desperate move.
Yeah,
just to get
I don't
up
know.
A bar tab.
And then maybe he comes down somewhere else, you know, in another part of the building, and he does leave, and then somebody murders him later on. Maybe something like that.
Yeah, it could be. But like I said, it just seemed really weird. And the creepy thing, too, this is also kind of a creepy detail, but that his girlfriend, she said, you know, after he went missing, she would make a point of, like, calling his cell phone every night. Just, you know,
just to see.
And she said it always went to voicemail. But then one night, it rang. Huh. No one answered it, but it rang.
It must have been an error.
And that, yeah, so she called Singular, who was the thing, and they said, yeah, it was probably just a glitch in the system and stuff like that. But she said she just kept calling it over and over, but, like, nobody ever answered it.
Yeah.
But his cell phone was never used. His credit cards were never used. So they still have no idea what happened to that guy. And that was 2006 that guy disappeared. And some people have speculated that he was a victim of this theoretical smiley face killer. Although, if he was, he's the only one whose body was never
found. Yeah, how did they get him out of there?
Right.
You know what I mean? There were cameras everywhere.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. Something fishy about that one.
And like I said, there's, you know, there are so many cases. And actually, when I was reading about this, like on various blogs and stuff like that, some people, particularly in the Wisconsin and Michigan area where a lot of these disappearances and deaths take place, are very adamant that there is something weird going on, because they said it happens a lot. Like, these sort of successful, handsome, white, college-age dudes turning up drowned.
Yeah.
So, you know,
and it's not a statistical thing.
Well, see, that's, and I'll kind of get into that after the break, because, you know, there have been, like, the FBI and stuff like that, they've kind of had their own thing to say about it. But I was going to say that there are still cases going on more recently that some people are still attributing to this. And I think one of the most recent ones was a guy named Zachary Marr. And this happened in February 2016. And that was in Boston. He was 22.
Yeah.
Same kind of deal. He was last seen at the Bell in Hand Tavern. He was going out with his cousins for his birthday or something like that. Now, he was seen on a surveillance camera. He had gone outside to smoke.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they saw him. There's pictures, of it clear as a bell, like of him standing outside the thing and smoking a cigarette. And his cousin had talked to him on text or something. He's like, yeah, I'm just outside smoking. I'll be back in a minute or something like that. But sometime between 1:44 a.m., which is when the last text came or when he was seen on the camera, and 1:51 a.m., when his cousins and stuff got their coats and came out to meet him, he vanished.
They didn't catch it on video.
No. But see, there's pictures of him standing out in front. Now, he was found a few weeks later. It looks like he maybe fell into the water. Although, again, most of the people he was with and stuff like that said he'd only had like 2 or 3 beers. And like I said, some of these bodies are found like a long way away from where they disappeared. Like, I think, I don't remember if it was Chris Jenkins or Patrick McNeil, but he was found like 12 miles away.
All right. Now, how far away was that guy found from that pub he was in? What are they talking about? Miles?
Yeah. I mean, I don't really know. I'm not from there, so I don't know how far away it was. But I mean, I think it was within walking distance.
It was within walking distance.
So I don't think he might have gotten picked up. But I'm just saying that there are cases like this happening a lot. And I think people are, you know, every time this happens, particularly when something weird happens like that, where, like, you know, 1 minute you see them on a surveillance camera just standing there smoking or whatever, and then like 5 minutes later they're gone and you can't really figure out where they went. You didn't see anybody pick them up. You know, they didn't say where they were going or anything like that. It just seems really odd. And I think people are latching onto that. And particularly, like I said, because all the victims are the same. I mean, I think almost all of them, I think a couple of them were maybe Asian, but I think up to 98% of them, 99% of them were white dudes in their early 20s, college students, all of them. Okay, so I'm going to take a break right now. And when we come back, I'm going to talk about the Center for Homicide Research and the FBI and stuff like that, how they think this is all bullshit and what they think is going on. So we will talk about that when we return. We'll be back in just a couple minutes.
There are terrors, real and imaginary, and I write about them all. Paranormal nonfiction, horror fiction, the Rochdale House Poltergeist, the Mammoth Mountain Poltergeist, the Associated Hopeful Monsters, Red Menace, the Five Poisons, Bellwether. Go to www.jennyashford.com or search Amazon for the Jenny Ashford author page.
The Unseen Hand. A New Exploration of Poltergeist Phenomena by Jenny Ashford, author of The Rochdale Poltergeist, House of Fire and Whispers, and The Mammoth Mountain Poltergeist. The Unseen Hand is a comprehensive collection of over 100 reported poltergeist cases from the first century to the present day. All the best-known cases are presented, from the Bell Witch to Jeff the Talking Mongoose, from Rosenheim to Tina Resch, from Enfield to The Entity. A large selection of fascinating and lesser-known accounts from all over the world are also included, and all contain testimony from the most eerie and extraordinary events. The Unseen Hand is the ultimate compendium for readers interested in poltergeist disturbances throughout history and the theories behind what causes them. On sale now from Amazon in print, ebook, and audiobook formats. Go to Unseen Hand Book on Facebook and visit www.jennyashford.com for more information.
The Villisca Axe Murders, Hinterkaifeck Farm, the Axeman of New Orleans, the Cleveland Torso, who put Bella in the Witch Hour, the Solder Children, the Phantom Killer, the Black Dahlia, Summerton. What is it about these unsolved murders that still fascinates us long after the cases have gone cold? Is it simply that we enjoy being able to come up with our own theories about what happened to the unfortunate victims? Or are we intrigued by the terrifying possibility that the killers are still out there somewhere? Take a grisly journey through the blood-soaked avenues of early 20th century crime in the new book, The Faceless Villain, Volume 1, by Jenny Ashford, now available on Amazon.
Okay, so the smiley face theory. Now, most people, I guess it's fair to say that most people in law enforcement that have weighed in on this theory do not think that it is a serial killer or killers, because it would probably have to be more than one.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they happen so far apart.
And then to organize and, something like that, and then to keep everybody involved quiet, it's...
Yeah, it does seem far-fetched.
I think so.
So the FBI has come out saying they have looked into it, but they don't think there's anything to it. And in 2010, the Center for Homicide Research put out, like, a paper, and it's called Drowning the Smiley Face Murder Theory, and it's available online. It's about 12 pages. You can read it. But they're kind of... debunking a lot of the things that people say about this theory, or make it, you know, to make it seem like it's one person or an organized group of people, even a loosely organized group of people. Now, one thing that people will say is that, you know, statistically, now there is one weird thing. This is kind of weird, is that all of these cases take place, almost all of them in the winter, almost all of them in the northern part of the country. Now, they're pointing out that if these are all, like, accidental drownings, just drunk guys fall into the river or whatever like that, you'd think that it would happen in the same numbers, like, everywhere in the country, like, down south and stuff like that.
The difference is that the water would be very cold.
Yeah, so that might be a factor, too.
So if they fall in, that might contribute to their death.
And another thing, too, as much has been made of the smiley face graffiti. Now, the original guys, Gannon and Duarte... they said it was at least a dozen, maybe as many as 22, where they said they found graffiti of a smiley face or the word Cincinnua somewhere near the body. Now, I don't know what near means, which is kind of one of the bones of contention.
Right.
Because here's the thing. The two guys used GPS and things like that to trace where they thought the bodies went into the water. This is not an exact science, obviously. All right. So they don't know exactly where the bodies went into the water. But when they looked around the places where the bodies went, where they thought the bodies went into the water, they said they found smiley face or this word, which is actually a Native American word. And it's a pretty commonly used, like it's the name of several businesses in that part of the country and stuff like that. So it's not as weird as it initially seems, because I had never heard that word. And I'm like, what the fuck? But apparently that's a thing there. The problem is that they didn't really give an exact measure of how far away this graffiti would have to be. You know what I mean? It's not like they found it like right next to the body or like right next to where it was done.
It might be 500 yards away.
Right. It might be like, you know, or it might be like a block away or something like that. None of the...
Which statistically, there's every... Within a block, there could be anything.
And that's kind of the...
Toenail clippers. There were toenail clippers. They're involved because, you know, every 500 feet, we find a pair of toenail clippers.
Right.
It could be anything, you know.
And it wasn't found in every case. It was probably only found in, like, maybe less than half of them. None of the smiley faces really look the same.
Right.
You know, so, like I said, you know, smiley face is a very common graffiti. Yeah. It could just be that they're kind of looking for something. Right. And something else about the smiley faces that I forgot to mention, too, is that they don't know when those smiley faces were put there.
Right.
It's like, yes, from a, you know, a lab technical point of view, you can kind of figure out when that paint was put on that wall or that tree or whatever, but it's not a super accurate measurement.
Right.
Like, it's only within about a year or something like that. So that graffiti could have been put there at any time.
Right.
Not around the time of the murder. It could have been much earlier. So, you know, there's really no way of knowing, like, when that turned up there. They're also, and same thing with the word, like, Sinsinawa, which, you know, seemed weird to me, but they said, no, it's a pretty common word and stuff like that. Now, they've also pointed out, well, some of the bodies had GHB in their systems or things like that.
You know.
But the thing is, yeah, it's like, one, they don't know if they administered that, if they took the GHB themselves.
Right.
Two, the body actually does produce GHB naturally in small amounts, and also produces it a little bit after death, also produces a little bit of alcohol. So there's no way of knowing how that got in there, if it was administered by someone else, or if they took it, or if it was just a natural byproduct. So I think kind of maybe one of the... one of the most reasonable things is like, yeah, all of the victim profile is similar,
right,
which does seem weird.
Yeah. But there are a lot of guys.
But yeah. And here's the thing. Because almost all of these, and as far as I know, all of the ones that they say are part of this, you know, theory.
Right.
It was always guys that had been out drinking.
Yeah. I noticed
in
that.
A bar or at a party.
Young guys.
And then they left and then they vanished and then their bodies turned up later.
And their race, I think it's just statistical. Because if you have a young guy in college drinking, chances are he's white, especially in the Northeast.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So when they drowned, it looks like they're a part of a group.
Yeah.
You could do the same thing probably with hookers. You know what I mean? Like, statistically hookers die. Statistically hookers die in certain ways. You know what I mean? If you were to look at all those hookers that died, you know, in a common death for the way a hooker dies, you know, on the job, you could say, oh, there must be one truck driver, you know, driving across the country, killing all these hookers. No, it's just statistical. You know?
Yeah.
And yeah, a truck driver is probably involved because there's most hookers are lot lizards.
Yeah.
They're in the damn truck stops.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because that's where all the people
that's where they are.
That's where the business is.
And if they get killed, chances are, statistically, it's a truck driver. Because that's who they're dealing with mostly.
Yeah.
Truck drivers, you know, they run into the wrong truck driver, kill them, you know.
Yeah.
It's usually a fight over money or, you know, you stole something from
me. Well, like I said, in general, it's a very high, high risk profession.
Right.
Because
drugs and drug money's involved. And
you're constantly going with people you don't know and things like that.
So now, evidently, if you're a white student, you know, college student in the Northeast, statistically, you might end up in a club, and statistically you might end up dead in the water somehow.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
It's just statistical probability.
You know, again, like I said, people might be saying, well, there's so many white dudes of a certain age range and stuff like that. But you have to think that statistically, white college age males, they go out and drink. They drink to excess. They engage in high risk behavior. Young males are, you know, way more likely to engage in high risk behavior. And some people have said, you know, why doesn't the same thing happen to women? Why aren't we finding drowned women turning up? Well,
I can tell you exactly what it is. Women don't go out alone as much.
Women don't, I don't think they drink as much to excess in public, or they don't go out by themselves, you know, as much as a man would. But also they don't tend to engage in the same types of high risk behavior. Whereas like, you know, a 21 year old drunk guy might say, I'm going to swim to Brooklyn, you know, or whatever, you know what I mean? Whereas like a woman would not do that generally.
Right.
So, you know, so I think there's some of that element too. And it should also be noted that most of these colleges where this stuff is taking place, where a lot of these guys are students, are kind of known as big, you know, drinking
party colleges.
Party colleges. There's kind of, especially like in Wisconsin, like in Eau Claire and, something else that the paper points out is that in cases where police actually stopped a drowning from happening or something like that, which they actually do quite a bit, they point out that a lot of these bars and stuff like that are situated near bodies of water. And a lot of times the body of water is downhill from the bar, meaning that if somebody walks out and they're super inebriated, then they're going to walk downhill because that's kind of the path of least resistance. Mm. And then, you know, they're going to fall in the water. like I said, in some cases, in the case of Chris Jenkins, in the case of Patrick McNeil, those were almost definitely homicides. But most of the cases that these two detectives point to as evidence of a serial killer are still ruled as accidents, and it doesn't appear that there were signs of trauma on the bodies, as there were in the case of Patrick McNeil and Chris Jenkins, which, like I said, had trauma on the body or had other things about it that made it seem like it was a homicide.
Yeah, and a funny thing about some of those guys right there is, you know, I lived for several years in Boston around those Ivy League colleges, and I used to go into those bars all the time, those bars and taverns, and some of those jock guys get pretty loaded, and they start throwing their weight around. And they start treating other people inside that those bars as if they're underclassmen. You know what I mean? And these aren't college students.
Yeah.
So theoretically, some of these guys could be going in there, throwing their weight around on guys that are not college students. And then when they leave, they follow them out and just beat them to death or do something bad to them. So that's, you know, that statistically can happen.
Yeah. And, you know, that can happen as well.
Yeah.
It's just that I kind of feel, like I said, could there be a serial killer? And I was actually watching another podcast, which I think is called Brain Scratch. And he did like a two-part thing where he was talking about this. And he kind of erred on the side of like, I don't think it's a serial killer either. Although he said, if it was something like that, he's like, the only thing I could think of was that there was some kind of site like on the deep web where there was like a site where people were killing these people in this particular fashion, just for this, like, it was like a small coterie of people, like an underground type of thing, that were killing these people and leaving the tag, the graffiti tag or whatever. And, you know, I said, yeah, that seems possible. Weirder things have happened. But it does seem, I mean, I don't think there's any way that it could just be one person. You know, could it be two? Could it be three? I don't know. And the thing about it, too, is that in the two cases, in Chris Jenkins' case and in Patrick McNeil's case, I mean, these people weren't drowned on purpose. They looked like they were killed in another way and then put in the water as though they were going to try and wash away the evidence or something like that. They weren't, there is no known serial killer who has ever deliberately drowned people as like their method of killing them. They're like in pretty much all homicidal drownings.
Yeah.
It's almost always a parent drowning their children or a husband drowning his wife, like in the bathtub.
Right.
They're like in the overwhelming amount of cases. Right. There is no case where a serial killer was actually drowning people on
purpose. We can
get
back to, you know, what the FBI's definition of a serial killer is, but a serial killer always is basically a serial rapist that kills the victim. So, you know what I mean? You have to prove that there was a sexual motive to say it was a serial killer. And there doesn't seem to be a sexual motive in any of these guys. They're all found with their clothes on.
Pretty much. And like I said, it's just, it seemed like the only, I mean, the only case where there was evidence of, you know, torture or some kind of trauma was the Patrick McNeil case from 1997. And we should note that he was not drowned. He was dead before he was put in the water. The other ones were drowned.
So, you know, what we're getting to, this is basically just a statistical thing. These deaths all look related, but they're not. Isn't that what you're saying?
Yeah. I mean, I'm kind of leaning toward
that.
That's
what I think. Yeah. I don't think they're related.
Yeah. And, you know, while it is kind of strange that, oh, why doesn't it happen as much in the South or something like that, but this paper points out that it seems to happen more in cold climates, not just in the U.S. It happens in the U.K. also and in Scandinavia and places like that. Anywhere where there's like young males that are going out getting really drunk. And, you know, some of them are going to toddle off and not. And they also point out that there might be an element of not necessarily suicidal behavior, but, you know, people who are super, super drunk maybe can get, I think they call it auto assassination, where
Where
you're like, where if you just have a fleeting, like, suicidal kind of thought, then you'll act on it without really thinking it through because you're really inebriated. So there might be an element of that, too. Like, the person might get pissed off or unhappy and just, I'm going to jump in here and fucking end it or whatever. So they said there might be an element of that going on, too. And like I said, they point out that, you know, other than Patrick McNeil, none of the bodies really had signs of trauma, then none of them had been beaten up, you know, or anything like that, which doesn't really square with a serial killer type of thing, because a serial killer, I mean, if you're going to be a serial killer, it seems weird that you would just, like, drug a dude in a bar
Drown him and not do anything.
They don't steal any of their money.
They don't rape the guy.
They don't. Yeah, there's nothing. There's no other motive, really.
Right.
And it just seems, like I said, is it possible? Like, you know, like he said on Brain Scratch, that there's like this small group of weirdos that kind of, you know, have some little online community that are like, hee hee, let's go like drown some jocks or something like that. It just seemed like an odd thing to do. It's possible, sure, but
how long could you keep that secret? Not long.
Yeah. And like I said, the whole thing about the smiley face, in most cases, they didn't find anything like that. And in the cases where they did find it, they don't know how long they were there. They didn't look like the same person had made them. Or there was no, there was no uniformity in the design or anything. Like one of them had devil horns, one of them had its tongue sticking out, one of them, they were all different looking.
Yeah, and everybody paints and writes with their own hand. If it was the same person, they'd be leaving a signature behind.
That's what I'm thinking. If they wanted to be famous or they wanted this to get out, you'd think they would have their shit together enough to like have like a brand or like a logo or something like that. Because like I said, there actually was a serial killer called the Happy Face Killer. He killed women. His name was Keith Jesperson, I think was his name. And he actually killed a bunch of women. They called him the Happy Face Killer because he would write letters to the police taunting them with a particular smiley face. So he had like a particular signature. Right. So this is not that guy. This is because he's in prison. But so this is a different thing. And like I said, all of them look different. There are pictures of them. People have taken pictures. None of them look the same.
Right.
So I just kind of feel like, I don't know. I feel like it's possible, but
improbable.
It's improbable is all I'm going to say. And I'm not saying like, don't yell at me. Like, you know what I mean? It's like, yeah. And I know that there are probably a lot more cases because like I said, when I was reading a lot of the comment sections, like under some of the posts about it, you know, particularly a lot of people in the Midwest and stuff like that were like, man, this happens all the time. And like some of them got to be murders. And, you know, it just seems kind of strange. And, you know, I'm not saying that it's not.
Yeah, some of them probably are murders.
And and the thing is, it's like once the theory gained, you know, notoriety, some people might have like copycatted and like gone out and done it then.
Right.
So like even if it wasn't a serial killer before, maybe now like somebody said, oh, I want to go out and murder somebody like that just because I heard about it. You know what I mean? So there could be a copycat element as well when there wasn't one to start with, particularly because this case got such a big... you know, particularly in 2008 when it first came out, it kind of got a big boost. And I think in 2015, and stuff like that. And, you know, I'm not saying, cause it seems like the original detectives, they kind of had a big heyday in, 2012, you know, the Gannon was on like a lot of shows and stuff talking about it. And he says that he's spending a lot of his own money on this investigation, but some of the family members of the deceased men are kind of like not all that happy about these two detectives. I mean, they're pretty much saying, we think they're just like out for money or they're trying to get, you know, notoriety or fame or whatever. And they think it's harmful to the families involved. Now, some of the family members are adamant that they think that their child didn't drown accidentally, that they actually were murdered, which fair enough, maybe they were. You know, and they respect that these guys are doing the work trying to find out what happened to them. But, you know, there are some that are just kind of like, no, I think these dudes are just like latching onto these families and trying to get famous off of them. And they're
exploiting it.
Well, there might be an element too. I mean, they're retired. Like I said, the Gannon has even admitted that he is like obsessed with this, with these cases. So there might be kind of an element of, he wants it to be true so badly, or he has so much invested in it that he's only seeing things that back it up and not seeing things that refute it, which is something that happens a lot when people get this wrapped up in a particular theory. They're only going to interpret things that happen in light of that theory.
Right.
And anything that doesn't square with it, they're just going to abandon it. So there might be an element of that going on, too.
I agree with you. I think they're... each one of these cases is a different situation. They look to have something in common just on the surface, but it's different things. Yeah. Some are accidents. Some are murders. It's all different, each one of them. And a lot of it has to do with just statistical probabilities of how a guy of that demographic, how he could go in the
I mean, and a guy of that age, there's, you know, a healthy, athletic, dude of 21, 22 years old, they're not usually going to die of like a heart attack, or they're usually going to die in a car accident or
misadventure.
Or misadventure. They're going to go out drinking and they're going to fall off of some shit or something like that.
That's what you're seeing.
And I think that's what you're seeing. And, you know,
and they're not including the guys that died behind the wheel, that were drinking and then died behind the wheel on their way back home.
Yeah.
They're not including those because it doesn't look similar.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But it's the same thing.
Yeah. And like I said, some of these cases, like I said, the case about Brian Schaefer, the guy that's just kind of disappeared off the face of the earth, you know, that they didn't see on the cameras and stuff, you know, could there be some kind of foul play there? You know, I'm not saying these cases don't have weird aspects to them. It's weird that like dudes would just like wander off and vanish or whatever without telling anybody where they were going. But I don't know. People do weird shit when they're drunk and they, you know, maybe they just had an idea. It's like, oh, I'm going to go over here and take a piss.
This is how
and then fell into the fucking river.
This is how stupid I was when I was in my 20s. Okay.
This should be good.
I was smoking a cigarette with leaned up against the tail of my car. I was in Boston. And at my feet was a manhole cover that had slots in it.
Yeah.
And this is 1800s probably construction. All right. I dropped something on the ground. I think it was my pack of cigarettes because I smoked back in those days. And when I leaned over to get the pack of cigarettes, my Zippo lighter fell out of my shirt pocket and went down and hit that manhole cover and fell into the water underneath it. All right.
Yeah.
So I said, well, okay, I'm just going to take this manhole cover off and reach down there.
And, you really
and
liked
that
Zippo.
Grab that lighter, you know? So I didn't take the manhole cover off, but I found a pole that was leaned up against the side of the thing and tried to take it off. I couldn't. And then I shoved the pole down to see where the bottom of it was, and I never could. And a guy that worked there, he worked with me, gets out back of my work, I said, man, I was going to take that manhole cover off, reach down, maybe even jump down in there and get that lighter. And he goes, dude, that's about 60 feet straight down. So you can imagine, my dumb ass, you know, I'd have jumped in there to go get the lighter.
And then they'd have never found
it. Never got me out of there. Yeah.
Yeah, you'd have just been down at the bottom of every bone in your body, bro.
Then they would have thought that I was murdered. Yeah, somebody put him down in there. No, my dumb 25-year-old ass nearly jumped down inside a damn manhole cover. And that pipe was, you know, maybe only 3 feet in diameter. I don't think I could have gotten back up. Yeah. You know what I mean?
That's a
because it was too narrow. Yeah, that's too narrow to get back up. But looking at it, it looked like it was only a few inches deep, the water.
Right.
Yeah, it wasn't. Oh, it went down forever.
That's pretty scary.
Yeah, whole pipe.
But yeah, I don't know. Maybe it makes people feel better. Like, I don't know. Like, I don't have kids and stuff like that. But maybe it makes people feel better to know that there was something. I mean, is that weird to think that maybe it makes you feel better to think that your kid was murdered rather than just, like, drunkenly falling off a pier or something?
No.
I wouldn't think. Yeah. I would think accident would be easier to deal with.
Yeah. I had many close calls when I was that age. Just being dumb. Accidents.
Yeah, that's what I mean. So I don't know. Like, I feel like it's kind of weird to think, oh, well, my kid was murdered, and, like, that would make you feel better than they just died accidentally.
But I was trying to, you know.
Because accidents, shit happens.
I'm trying to put myself in this situation, 20s and water. And my closest call I had when I was in my 20s about water was the manhole story.
Yeah.
You know, and it was just crossed my mind to take that manhole cover off.
Yeah.
Which is easier to, you know, it's easier said than done. Those things are about 2 inches thick and they're iron, you know.
Yeah.
But I tried to get a stick, you know, and pry it open.
Yeah.
Had I pried it open, there was a chance I might have just jumped in it. Because it looked like it was shallow.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I couldn't see the bottom. But I just assumed that it was.
I would hope that you would have the presence of mind to stick the stick in there down there.
Yeah, well, I did. Okay. You know, once I couldn't get the lid off of it, I stuck the stick down in there. And that stick was an 8-foot-long stick and it never touched the bottom.
Okay, so you're like.
And a guy I worked with, I said, man, that thing's deep. And he goes, yeah, that thing's got to go down about 60 feet probably. Because he'd seen it, he saw it dry.
Oh, okay.
At certain times of the year, it went dry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, like I said, I think it's more likely that guys, you know, frat guys, stuff like that, they go out Friday night, Saturday night, they get really, really drunk. They're like, I'm just going to go outside and smoke, or I'm going to go outside and pee or something like that. And they kind of have a little brainwave or something like you do. And they just kind of, I'm going to go over here and do something, you know. And then they just fall in the water and they can't get out.
And the water's cold.
Yeah. And, you know, like that might be why it happens more like in cold climates and stuff like that.
If that water's real cold, it only takes a few seconds to get hypothermia.
Yeah,
lock up and die.
Yeah, drown. You just have like you have a heart attack if the water is cold enough. So yeah, I'm kind of, like I said, possible serial killer, but I kind of doubt it.
I think it's unlikely.
Yeah, very unlikely.
Yeah.
So anyway, that'll do it for this episode about the smiley face murder theory.
Hope it was still a cool story, though.
It was, yeah. Cool story, like I said, I found it very interesting. Yeah. And like I said, a couple of them were murdered. And and they haven't solved them. Yeah, so, I'm sure. I just don't think it was a serial killer.
But I don't think they're as strange as that they appear on the surface. Like maybe they were killed by guys who knew them. There was vendettas involved. Money, that kind of thing.
Yeah, it's possible.
Yeah. Girls involved. Yeah, something like that.
Yeah. So if you like the show, remember to like, subscribe, share, all that other cool stuff. Check out our Facebook, our Twitter, and all of our other social media. Also, go to our blog, which is 13oclockpodcast.wordpress.com. If you would like to give a one-time donation, there's a link over in the sidebar. Or if you'd like to give a monthly donation, then check out our Patreon page at patreon.com/13oclockpodcast. Check out our latest movie review, which was The Omega Man, which is right here on this channel if you haven't seen it yet. Also go to Zazzle.com/13oclock and check out our selection of t-shirts, if you would. And also check out my new book, The Faceless Villain. The audiobook should be out very soon. And if you wanted a free audio code, just remind me. I've written most of your names down, but just in case I forgot anyone, let me know. And it should be a week or two, and you should have your code.
Maybe we'll do a special show to launch that book when it's ready.
Yeah, maybe we should.
Okay.
But that'll do it for this episode, and we will see you next Tuesday. Bye. And I can tell you know how hard this life can be, but you keep on smiling for me.